good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. As we, as Catholics, and by the way, other Christians too are in the same position here, as we face changes in American culture and really a parting of the ways between what appears to be the American way of life and the Christian way of life, we've got to begin thinking, how do we do things differently? How do we run our businesses differently? How do we see our families as domestic church? How do we make sure that in all of our creative scholarship that we're integrating faith and reason? And, of course, in the field of healthcare, we have all kinds of challenges that we're facing. Many of us became most aware of those recently because of the HHS mandate. And all of a sudden we're thinking, America's changing. Are we responding creatively? Well, I'm glad to say there are people responding creatively, and one of them doing so is Dr. William Shavey. He has served with the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Michigan. He is the founder of Emmaus Health. He practices general family medicine, but has expertise in inpatient medicine and in complex chronic illness, most specifically cardiovascular disease. And also with me is Sarah Patton, a pediatric nurse practitioner who's also working now with Emmaus Health. And it's good to have you guys.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
it's nice to be here.
Let's go to this. I'll start with you, Dr. Shavey. I'm just curious, in terms of your own story, your own personal story as a disciple of Jesus, when did you begin to think that you wanted to do medicine differently?
I would hope that as a Catholic, I've always done it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that about a year or so ago, I had an epiphany, and that epiphany helped me to go from what might have been a passive doing things differently to intentionalizing doing things differently. And I can tell you a story about a patient that led to this, and she's given me permission to communicate this, but I'll keep her name de-identified, and we'll call her Mary.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary was a patient I had followed for a long time. She was overweight. She smoked cigarettes and marijuana. She had diabetes. She lived most of her life with her family in a trailer, but not just in the trailer. Most of her life was in her bedroom.
Mm.
She wasn't even getting out of the bedroom.
Wow.
She would sit in her room, watch TV, eat M&Ms, smoke. That was her life. And visit after visit, basically the same thing, not getting anywhere with the diabetes control, the blood pressure, the weight, etc.
Just spinning your wheels.
Spinning wheels could have just put, play on the same visit. So at one point, I just said a prayer before I went in to see her. And I said, I need to do something differently. And it was as if the voice was as plain as yours coming to me and said, appeal to her dignity. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. So I continued praying as I was walking to the door that I would also get some illumination about what that meant.
Sure.
And as I walked in, I set my papers down, set my pen down, and I just talked to her differently. And I said, I just feel like I need to get to know you a little bit better, a little bit differently in order to help you. So she started telling me her story. And, she had her first menstrual period at age 9, at which point she was already becoming marginalized from others who were her age.
Yeah.
She was overweight.
Mm-hmm.
She had some conflict in her family. And as we went on and on and on, there were so many stories like this where she was just pushed to the side, just marginalized. And it became clear to me that there was no way I could get her to invest in herself when no one had ever told
her
she had any value.
Her whole history has been this way, yeah.
So, over the course of a couple of visits, we just started talking about this concept of dignity. And this is what I mean by the intentionalizing of it. If you can agree that you're made in the image of likeness of God, then you have value just by that.
Right.
So we talked about that. Now, I work at the University of Michigan. Had to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
But she sort of gave me permission to go down this path.
Sure.
And as we went down the path, and she began to see that she really did have value, here's what happened. She got out of her bedroom. She got out of her trailer. She got a puppy.
Hmm.
She started walking several miles a day. She lost 50 pounds. She got off of her diabetes medications. She got off of her high blood pressure medications.
Mm-hmm.
She quit smoking cigarettes. The marijuana stuff we're still working on. But my point is, with nothing else other than just appealing to the sense that she has value and dignity and purpose, she did all of this, not me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I realized from that and other experiences I could tell you besides, that if you can begin to get people to realize they have value and realize that they have dignity, sky's the limit.
That's a tremendous story. Now, to do that, regularly and more effectively, though, you needed a different venue, I assume.
Yes. Well, we needed two things. We needed a different venue, and I'm not being critical of the University of Michigan.
Sure.
It's just a secular institution.
Right.
It's a little harder to do that. We needed a different venue, and we also are going to need a different model. So the business model of primary care is one that says you need to see patients about every 12 to 15 minutes. Really hard to provide any kind of different model of care other than, you know, saying I'll pray for you and putting a crucifix up in 12 to 15 minutes.
Right.
So there's a model of care called direct primary care, which some people think of as like concierge medicine. But what direct primary care is where people pay a membership to be involved in a practice. And with that, the physician has fewer patients. They're able to spend more time. Now, this is something that we will evolve to. This is not something that we will start off with because it's going to take some time for us to develop a direct primary care product that we can have on the market. If we do this like a concierge practice and we price it above the average person, then we're not meeting the common good and we're violating another of our Catholic promises.
Yeah, you're not doing one of the other things you want to do.
So we have to do that.
Which is accessibility.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so we're working on that as well. But that's a place we want to go because I think that would be necessary. Some altered model of care, and direct primary care is what we're looking at right now, is going to be necessary in order for us to fulfill this mission.
Hmm. Well, Sarah, you're an old friend of the family, and I was delighted to hear you were going to be working with Emmaus. So, but I'm curious, your own experience and your own sense of call.
Yeah, so I have been working for the past 3 years in the neonatal intensive care unit at St. Joe's as a nurse, and also going through graduate school at University of Michigan and learning what it means to be a primary care provider. And really just kind of throughout my schooling and work started realizing that there was something that I wanted to do more as a Catholic and as a Catholic provider. I wanted to have that be part of my identity in the workplace. And there's so much talk in the church about the new evangelization and discipleship, and it's one thing to be a disciple with your friends and your family and in a social level and just in a very basic idea of that, but it's different to really think about doing that in the workplace.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's definitely a calling to do that in the secular workplace, but as you know, Dr. Shavey mentioned, it's something that we needed a different venue to be able to do that and to really spend time with patients and to also for the patients to expect more, I think, of us and for us to be able to deliver that. And so I'd heard about this endeavor about a year and a half ago and was very excited. And, it's just really incredible to see everything coming to fruition at this point and just to see how the Lord's hand has been in this in so many ways and all the work that Dr. Shavey and a lot of people have put into it and just the sense that there really is a huge need for this and that people in the community are excited about it. They're hopeful and supporting us and really looking forward to this idea of seeing what it means to have a really true Catholic identity in healthcare.
Yeah, it is very exciting. And where are you now in terms of location, when the doors open, how's all that work?
So we will officially open October 13th. We're actually going to see a few patients next week to try to get some bugs out. But officially, October 13th, we are at Domino's Farms, Lobby L, first office on the right, which is L2020.
Okay. So
I'm sorry, L2200. L2200. Okay. And we have a web page. If people want to go there, they can see about the clinic.
Yeah, please.
And they could also register as a patient. We're installing computers this week, so the appointment system's not up. But the web page is www.emmaushealth.org.
www.emmaushealth.org, emmaushealth.org.
Yes.
We'll give that address out as we go along, and we'll also have it posted at our website at AveMariaRadio.net. Now, what I'd like to do is go over some of the principles. We talked about some already, and really it sounds like the dignity of the human person is kind of the central principle.
Absolutely, and I think I've said to people, the next person who tells me they don't want to be respected for their dignity will be the first person who tells me that, in which case I don't view this as an office just for Catholics or just for Christians.
No, right.
And I think to the degree that I've been able to practice this sort of healthcare at the University of Michigan, I've had patients who, have nothing to do with organized religion, who still respond to being loved and cared for with dignity. And so you're absolutely right. That is the core principle.
Yeah. Is the problem, I'm curious, is the primary difficulty of taking a more creative approach to this, is the primary difficulty resistance from colleagues or the industry as a whole, or coming up with a viable financial model?
In the process of creating this, some of the people who've worked with me on this, David Wilson, Tim Patton, Mike O'Day, some mm-hmm. others, Eric Cradwell, we've talked with a lot of other people about what innovation means to them. And as it turns out, everybody's innovation looks the same, which is no longer innovation. It's sort of the fad and it's the trend. Mm-hmm. And the main reason for that, I think, is because of the handcuffs that our current reimbursement model puts on us, because it's very hard to be innovative in this fee-for-service model that we have. So I think that is a big part of it. But I think there are other factors as well. And I think, you know, there is a natural law that says we should treat everyone with dignity anyway. So why wouldn't everyone do this? And I think if you don't have a faith base, it's hard to intentionalize that.
Right.
I mean, what's your North Star? We're all going to deviate, but what brings you back to that? So if you don't have faith, I think it's easy to lose that.
Mm-hmm. Among your colleagues, why do they go into healthcare? You know, when you talk, why do people do that?
So at the University of Michigan, I think it's for a myriad reasons. For some, it's the intellectual pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a number of outstanding researchers and teachers,
sure.
and I think education is a part of it. In family medicine, I think it is more relational, but there's okay. also an incredible amount of frustration in primary care, not just at the University of Michigan, but in primary care all around. And the reason is because we're being measured in healthcare now by these quality measures. You know, did you get your diabetic patient their eye exam? Did you do your foot exam? Did you check their cholesterol, et cetera? And what is happening is that they're putting layers and layers of people between the physician or the provider and the patient. And the relational aspect that has drawn a lot of people to primary care is being split apart.
We're going to come back on the other side of the break, continue this. Sarah, I want to talk to you about the field of nursing, what drives people, what motivates people. I was hospitalized for 10 weeks, about 10 years ago now, and I have to say I had very good experience with the nursing staff there, but I didn't get to know them very well. I'd like to know what motivates people. I'm Al Cresta. More coming up.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Are you discerning the religious life? Join the Servants of Jesus of the Divine Mercy October 18th and 19th at the Divine Mercy Center in Clinton Township. Open to men and women discerning religious life, the retreat is free of charge and includes meals, accommodations, talks, all-night adoration, and Sunday Mass. Space is limited, so reserve yours at sjdivinemercy.org. This message is brought to you by Office Express. Let's all support each other. OfficeExpressNow.com.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. On September 29th, the church celebrates the feast of the archangels, Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael. Gabriel was the angel who told Mary she would carry the Son of God in her womb. Mary was confused and frightened by this, but Gabriel's message was, "Do not be afraid." Such is Gabriel's message today to every pregnant mother. Do not be afraid to welcome new life, even when it upsets your plans, changes the direction of your life, and requires you to mature in unexpected ways. Do not be afraid if you feel unprepared or others tell you that you are not ready. If God creates a life in the womb, it's because He is making you ready and has plans from all eternity for that child and for you. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Discover what others say about Franciscan University of Steubenville. Forbes ranks Franciscan University in the top 8% of all U.S. colleges. U.S. News & World Report puts Franciscan in the top tier of Midwest colleges and Kiplinger's in its 100 best values. And the Cardinal Newman Society says Franciscan University provides a faithful Catholic education. Discover a university that's academically excellent and passionately Catholic. Discover Franciscan University of Steubenville at franciscan.edu.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
What's the path to true happiness? Turns out our bodies can answer that question better than we can. A recent study by UCLA and the University of North Carolina found that people who pursued happiness primarily through pleasure produced fewer disease-fighting antibodies and experienced more joint swelling than people who pursued happiness by being loving and trying to lead meaningful lives. Although both groups claimed to be equally happy, researchers found that only the participants who worked hard to be loving, virtuous people were happy all the way down to the cellular level. Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body tells us that we can know God's intention for our lives and relationships by reflecting on the design of our bodies. Science and faith agree. The path to true bone-deep happiness is to love your neighbor and to live virtuously. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
The Ave Maria Radio app is available for all Apple and Android users. Listen to Ave Maria Radio live or listen to your favorite shows whenever you want, on demand. Like what you heard? Post a link on your email, Facebook, or Twitter account in just two taps. You can even leave a voice message on our feedback page. Purchase books or look up references from our hosts and guests, and it's all absolutely free. Just go to the App Store and type Ave. It's just that simple. The Ave Maria Radio app.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, talking with Dr. William Shavey, founder of Emmaus Health. This is a new model in Catholic health care. We're talking about some of the foundational issues involved, and I want to talk about some of the clinical issues as we continue to go along. Also joining us is pediatric nurse practitioner Sarah Patton. And so you're starting from the beginning, right?
Yes.
You're going to be there right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very good. We were talking before the break. I was talking with Dr. Shavey about motivations of colleagues. So let me go over to the world of nursing for a minute. Among your colleagues, what drives them? What motivates them? Why do people go into nursing?
You know, when I started nursing school about 7 years ago now, there was a huge shortage in the field of nursing. And I know initially at that point, that was a big draw. It was a stable career. It was one that also allowed for a family life. And there was a big need for it. And I think that need has definitely since decreased. But consistently, among the nurses that I am friends with, the nurses I've worked with, everyone does tend to go into the profession with a sense of altruism and of wanting to serve and to help others and to care for people. Just to give back and to love them and serve them. And unfortunately, in the world of inpatient nursing in the hospital, the nurse-to-patient ratios are such that it makes it very difficult to do that and to be able to spend enough time with your patients and to really give them the time they deserve and really show them that you're honoring them and that you want to be caring for them. And I remember distinctly, it was a couple months after I started, I was working on an adult medical surgical unit, and I walked by a patient room and I overheard another nurse, probably in her early 40s, and she was praying with a patient. And she came out of the room and I kind of asked her, I said, do you pray with every patient? And she said, I ask every patient at the start of my shift, I go in, I introduce myself, and I ask if I can pray for them. And she said, not once has someone said no.
Yeah, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, it was at St. Joseph Mercy Hospital, which is a Catholic hospital, but plenty of patients who aren't Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
But just the fact that people are so receptive to that, and that really kind of is what made me start thinking about the importance of doing that, and regardless of how much time you have, really making sure that the people you care for know that you're putting them first and that you are trying to really treat them with the utmost dignity that they deserve as a human person.
Yeah, I like I said earlier, I was hospitalized for 10 weeks, two different, one was all different kinds of places, ICU, regular floor, had rehab. But one thing that surprised me, I remember writing on it, and that is that the vast majority of the nursing staff seemed comfortable with, say, spirituality, not dogmas, but just some idea that there's something more than just protoplasm in motion here, you know. And some of them have deeper conversations with than others, but I did not expect how easy it would be to carry on those conversations. And very few people were reluctant to talk. Almost everybody had something to say, and like I said, it was all over the place. I mean, some were very New Agey, others were serious Catholics, but many of them weren't that articulate. But you knew that they understood that underneath all of this, there's something more than meets the eye. Let me ask about clinic practice and what you'll be able to spend. Like, the aim is to be able to spend more time with patients. Is that right?
It is.
Okay. Now, why is that important?
Well, as I said, I think it's very hard. Well, let me back up a little bit. A lot of the patients I've seen in my work at the University of Michigan are very complex medical problems, congestive heart failure, kidney failure, those types of things. And it may take 5 to 10 minutes simply to go through the medication list. And, you know, I remember a patient I had at the University of Michigan, and I talked about the quality measures previously, all of which are very important. And this gentleman was very complicated. I would have been perfect on all of his quality measures. But I couldn't get his diabetes quite under control. We were piloting this program with a nurse practitioner. And when the nurse practitioner would join part of the team approach for this patient, she would spend 45 minutes with the patient. And once she sat down and had 45 minutes with him, she found out that of the two insulins he was using the one that should have been once a day before meals and the one that should have been before meals once a day.
Huh.
He had them backward. Well, only because she had the time could she pick that up. And I think if you were to talk to any primary care physician, whether they have a spiritual base or not, every single one will tell you to a T that they are way too rushed in clinic, especially for the complexity of patients that we see.
Wow. I just finished this weekend a biography of C.S. Lewis, the great Christian apologist, and I never paid any attention to his last few months in his illness. But it turns out that he was probably diagnosed too late. It was a prostate problem, a renal failure, heart problem. Anyways, sounds like he died earlier than he needed to. But part of the reason for that, though, is that he didn't really want to spend the time. You know what I'm saying? And this is a funny thing, too. The physician he had was actually a longtime friend who thought he knew more about Lewis's life and condition than he did. He stopped asking the important questions. And I thought that's funny, because normally you would think somebody you've known for a while, you would be able to probe, but he didn't.
Well, I think that's an important point, too, and something that we've talked about as a group. When I say we, I also mean Jen Castillo, who's a general internist, who will be part of our group along with Sarah. And that is that, you know, the Catholic community here is rather tight-knit, and it's kind of a closed community.
A lot of people know each other.
But sometimes, if you have a relationship outside the office, we might find ourselves in that same situation of thinking we know things, maybe not asking those questions. So there's going to be a greater responsibility on us to be able to respect that personal relationship when it exists, but to continue to have that highest level professional relationship that we can.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And see, C.S. Lewis would have lived another 10 years maybe. We would have had some more books from him if you'd been doing it. So, now, how So give me an idea of what the office will be like, how things, you walk in, you make an appointment, how's this work?
So initially, we may not look all that much different from a regular office,
okay.
But we're going to be fairly traditional initially until we can get this direct care model up. But I would like to think that we're going to be as family-friendly as possible. One example is that our exam rooms are huge. And you know, one of the challenges I had in other work environments is, you know, you might have a family that had 5-6 children. Well, they wouldn't let 5 or 6 children schedule appointments all in one afternoon because what if they don't show up?
Yeah.
But if you have this more family-friendly approach,
that's interesting.
You know, and a family has 7 children and they need physicals for all 7 in one afternoon, our exam rooms are big enough.
Mm-hmm.
Our philosophy should be conducive. You know, and hopefully we would be very family friendly in that regard. We will not initially have obstetrics when we open, but we hope to introduce that, and I think that will, add to the spectrum of care that we're able to provide right now. Also, after the first of the year, so the bigger goal of this whole Emmaus idea is not just to have a clinic in Ann Arbor. But I can remember many years ago, our bishop, Bishop Boyer, who's been wonderfully supportive of this entire effort, and in fact is going to come out later in October and give a blessing to the clinic.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, he's been incredibly supportive.
It's wonderful to hear that.
But he said many years ago, he said, you know, I don't know a lot about health care, but I wonder if the church should be involved in health care. After all, what's Catholic about a heart cath?
Mm-hmm.
And he has a point, and I've said somewhat flippantly, is while that may be true, there's something very Catholic about a prostate exam because it brings many men to their knees in prayer. However, I did not say that. Now, that notwithstanding, I think that as Catholics or as Christians, we have to define what it means to have this interface between our faith and medicine. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be Catholic? It probably is more than just having a crucifix up.
Yeah.
There will be patients who will not want you to pray for them. So what does it mean? And so I think if we can begin to define that, I'm not going to have the hubris to say we know what it is, but if we can define it through this experience, and we can then begin to scale it out and have other clinics around the country so that if someone says, you know, I'd like to go to a place where I know it's Catholic and I know they're going to follow the ethical and religious directives of the church. Oh, there's an Emmaus Health Center here. I know that will provide that for me. That if we can get this model down, then we can scale it out to other communities around the country. So we will be beginning in Ann Arbor with our first clinic here at Domino's. We're also going to be opening a pediatrics practice sometime after the first of the year. Oh. I don't have the exact date,
okay.
But we'll be opening a pediatrics practice with another wonderful physician, Maria Skocelis, after the first of the year. So we'll have two offices in Ann Arbor.
Good. Now, what does it mean to uphold the ethical and religious directives of the Catholic Church? How does that actually impact your work?
Well, going back to defining what it means to have Catholic medicine, I think people would look at it in one of two ways. They would either look at the hospitals, or they would look at those freaks who don't refer for abortion and prescribe birth control. And I think to the uninformed, that's what Catholic health care would be.
Yeah.
But to me, if you go back to this dignity approach, the ethical and religious directives aren't some burdensome add-on where you say, I'm sorry, I can't refer you for an abortion because I'm in a Catholic facility. You say, I'm not going to refer you for an abortion because that violates your dignity.
Yeah.
That violates the very principle on which we are based.
It doesn't make for human flourishing.
Yeah, and so it is a seamless extension of what we do. But more specifically, the church has published ethical and religious directives which say what we can and can't do in terms of our ethical framework. So obviously the issues of reproductive health being somewhat most paramount among those, but also issues of at the end of life as well.
Yeah.
And there are other things in the middle, certainly.
Yeah. It just seems to me this is a perfect time for this to be happening because there seems to be more concern among Catholics vis-a-vis our healthcare system, and people wondering what options are we going to have in the future, whether it's at the origins of life or at the end. People are worried.
Well, I do think there are issues of trust. I remember hearing a story on NPR a few years ago about how few African Americans were bone marrow donors, and it was because of a lack of trust in the healthcare system owed to the Tuskegee experiments. And I think you see that. I'd be interested to hear what Sarah has to say, too. But I think you see that among Catholics who may not trust the medical establishment. And if we can establish ourselves as a credible resource, I think that might be valuable.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, it is, it's a huge responsibility we have because there are so many faithful Catholics in the area where we're starting this in Ann Arbor, and I think they are going to have high expectations, as they should.
Sure.
And, you know, as we're going through this and working with one another and really trying to decide what that means, it's all just going to go back to affirming the dignity of the human person. And as it says in our name, Emmaus Health, and, you know, thinking about the story with the apostles who were walking along the road to Emmaus with Jesus and they didn't recognize
right.
him. And we want to be seeing Jesus in every patient that we see. We're going to be striving for that and to really recognize that in them. And, you know, as the verse goes, talking about that their hearts burned and they knew that it was him. And so we're really going to be striving for that and definitely praying for it and encouraging one another and striving for that with our patients.
One other important thing real quickly.
There was
a quote, I think it was attributed to Flannery O'Connor, when someone said, what is it, you know, what do you have to do to be a great Catholic novelist? And she said, first you have to be a great novelist. And I think for us, if we're going to strive to be good Catholic physicians, first we have to be good physicians.
Absolutely.
And we have been incredibly blessed with the people like Sarah and like Jen Castillo who have been attracted to this and have been willing to take the risk to join us.
Well, we'll talk again. I want to keep following what you're doing. It's exciting. And people can learn more by going to emmaushealth.org. That's E-M-M-A-U-S, emmaushealth.org. And we'll look forward to October 13th for your opening.
Thank you
Thanks
very much.
So much.
I appreciate your time.
Sarah, thank you.
Good being with you.